It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish, co-editor at Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
All right. So we have something that we do semi-regularly here, which is you're going to be giving us a look at the upcoming election.
Well, we do it every time there's an election, which is, I guess, a semi-regular kind of thing. But Eat the Steak does endorsements for elections. This is all information that's at the website, eatthestate.org. So if you don't have pen and pencil handy or don't have a photographic memory for the names of a lot of boring candidates, this is on the web, and we'll repeat that again at the end of all this. But it's the same caveats that we have every time we go through these endorsements, which is, it's basically just one opinion, and folks should make up their own mind. That's number one. Do your own research. Synthesize information. Don't just believe me, or don't just believe the mailers that you get in the mail, or, the Seattle Times or the Stranger, or anybody else. Do your own research. And then the other thing is that, voting is, sometimes a useful thing, particularly at the local level, and this year is an off year, so it's strictly a local election. But, a real change comes through social movements. It doesn't come through voting. That's usually the last thing that changes. So, if you want to see a better world, don't just vote and then think your work is done, because, it isn't. But that being said, we do have an election coming up. The deadline is August 18th. Now, this will be the first election in which it is a deadline rather than an election day, because it's an all-mail ballot. People will get their ballots in the mail, and they simply have to be postmarked by August 18th, which means people will be voting continuously over the next 3 weeks. Those ballots should have gone in the mail a couple of days ago. Some people may already have them, and other people should be getting them in the next couple of days. But
they should call it like an all-postal ballot, because you think of all-mail, and it kind of sounds like...
It kind of goes back to the founding of the country, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and all they have to be property landowners, too, I imagine, and all white. But maybe we can get past that.
All right.
Anyway... The other piece of that, of course, is that because things simply have to be postmarked by the 18th, in some of these cases we won't know the outcome for a few more days after that. But because this is a primary, the top two vote getters move on to the November election. So this, in some cases, or in fact in most cases, won't actually decide who wins the office. It'll simply decide who will be on the ballot in November. And in cases where there are two or fewer people running for the office, that office won't even be on the ballot this time. So it's a relatively short ballot. So we're going to try and get through it all this week, and if we don't, we'll carry it on to next week, but we'll see what we can cover this week. So starting with the county offices, King County Executive is the most powerful elected office in King County, and that has been held by Ron Sims for the last 243,000 years. But he has moved on to the Obama administration, and so there are a number of people running to replace him. Five of the, I believe, eight candidates are considered the most viable candidates. Strictly speaking, it's a nonpartisan office, but they all have partisan affiliations. Four Democrats and a Republican. The Republican is Susan Hutchison, the former Cairo TV news anchorwoman, newsreader, who is extremely conservative, a former chairperson of Discovery Institute that has spread creationism, intelligent design to the masses for the last number of years. The Discovery Institute, oddly enough, removed her name from their website and scrubbed their website of references to her just before she launched her campaign. And she's been trying very hard to downplay both her conservative credentials and her affiliations with some of those areas, and hoping that particularly because it's summer, people aren't paying close attention, et cetera, her name familiarity, wasn't that nice one who was on the TV, will help her win the election. And sure enough, she's been leading in the polls so far, which is a really scary kind of thing. The other thing that's helping her is that there are four Democrats running against her, all of whom are former or current rather, office holders and who don't have a whole lot separating them. There are two state legislature members from the east side, Ross Hunter and Fred Jarrett, and two county council members from Seattle, Larry Phillips and Dow Constantine. Of those four, the two east side Democrats are the more conservative. They're tending to run on anti-tax, pro-private rights kind of platforms. And the two Seattle council members are the more traditionally liberal types. Of those two, Larry Phillips has been on county council for roughly the same amount of time that Ron Sims has been county executive, since, you know, pterodactyls were roaming the skies, and has done very little on county council during that time. Whereas Dow Constantine, I think, is probably the best choice in this race. He is the most progressive of the four. He has done more on county council than Larry Phillips has, and he would, but any of those four Democrats would certainly be a massive improvement over Susan Hutchison, and stopping her and educating voters as to who she is and what she actually stands for, because she is wildly out of sync with the values of most King County voters, is probably the biggest imperative in this primary election race.
And when you say the east side, you mean the east side of the county, east side of,
yes,
Lake Washington, as opposed to east side of the mountains?
Yeah, not east of the mountains, east side of the county.
They wouldn't
east
be able
of Lake Washington.
They wouldn't be able to run if they're on the east side of the mountains.
Yes, okay.
All right. Very good. And then county council?
There's not a whole lot going on in county council. None of the races are, I think there's only three on the ballot, and those will only appear in their own districts, are particularly competitive. It's just the incumbents and you know, some fringe challengers against them. And that's true for both Republicans and Democrats. The incumbents are going to coast. In those kind of cases, we don't bother doing endorsements because they're not competitive races.
All right. Well, then that moves us on, then, if nothing there at the county, then the Port of Seattle.
Yeah, and these are important races. The Port of Seattle, as we've talked about many, many times on this program, probably the most corrupt public agency in the state. And there are a couple of very good candidates running for Port Commission this time that are at least pledging to sort of, you know, try and clean up some of the mess. The two candidates that we would strongly urge people to consider are Rob Holland and Max Vekich, running for positions 3 and 4, respectively. The execrable Pat Davis is finally retiring, so both of these are open seats. The other seat being vacated is Lloyd Harrah, who's running for King County Assessor. So these are both open seats. Both of the opponents in these races, or the major opponents anyway, are the sort of traditional old boy developer slash corporate patron of the port kind of candidates. So there's very clear choices in both of these races, and in both of them we're recommending the reform candidates. So that's Rob Holland and Max Vekich, respectively, for positions 3 and 4.
All right. And that takes on to the city of Seattle, is that correct?
Yeah, and probably the most problematic of the races on the ballot for this month, which is the mayoral race. Greg Nichols, you know, we've been saying for 4 years we desperately need somebody to run against him, and we stand chastised and corrected at this point because we weren't nearly specific enough. What we should have said is what we need somebody good to run against Greg Nichols, because there are now 7 other people running against Nichols for mayor this year, 5 or 6 of whom are fairly viable in the sense that they've been raising money and have some supporters, etc., etc. But most of them are either indistinguishable from or actually running to the right of Nichols in terms of being more conservative, more developer-friendly, more hostile to the needs of social services and neighborhoods and small businesses and so forth. So let's run through some of those folks, just to give you an idea of what we're up against. Probably the biggest name is Jan Drago, and Drago has been on council, for 16 years again. She has been, during that time, easily the most conservative member of, city council. She is former activist with the Downtown Seattle Association, which is essentially the trade organization of the big downtown corporations and businesses and retail. And she has served their interests very well on city council. She has been in almost complete agreement with Mayor Nichols on everything over the 8 years of Greg Nichols' term, but decided until a couple months ago when she decided to run against him, and has been making the centerpiece of her campaign, well, people don't like Greg Nichols. He just isn't a warm, cuddly kind of guy. Well, this is true, but that really isn't how policy is made when you get right down to it. And in terms of policy, Jan Drago would be basically no different from Greg Nichols. So she'll be just as bad. But the problem is those are the two most prominent names, and so the challenge is finding somebody else other than Jan Drago to try and survive the primary, since the top two people will go on to the general election, and you don't want Tweedledum and Tweedledumette to be the folks on the ballot come November. Who are the other choices? Well, we have James Donaldson, the former basketball player, who is running on a small business platform of being, taxes being onerous, et cetera, et cetera. He's never held elected office. He's never really run anything except for, being on the basketball court and then running a gym, trading on the fame from his basketball career. And that doesn't really qualify him to run a city of, 10,000 employees. At the same time, he has hired as his campaign manager Cindy Laws, who last got notoriety in 2004, 2005, when she was on the monorail board for anti-Semitic remarks at that point. More recently, she got some attention for an email in which she said something like, you flaming liberals drive me crazy, or something like that, about, I think it was about the bag tax or something. Maybe it was the employer tax. In any event, it was very, very much a tip-off that Donaldson is running a Rush Limbaugh kind of campaign, that he's trying to be the populist little guy, even though he's very tall. But so that's one of the options. Norman Sigler has not gotten a whole lot of attention. He's also he's also running, but the two other biggest candidates are Mike McGinn and Joe Malahan. Now McGinn's an interesting kind of case. He is the former head of the local Sierra Club and has been running an environmental campaign, even though Greg Nichols has really spent most of his political capital over the last 8 years on things like the bag tax and global warming and trying to present intense development as an environmental, which is to say an anti-sprawl strategy, rather than being the massive payoff to developers that in fact basically motivates Nichols. But the issue that McGinn is using to separate himself from Nichols is the downtown tunnel, which is the one thing that Nichols has, when it comes, push comes to shove, and the environment would lead one to a different conclusion than paying off all your developer friends. Well, developing the lucrative downtown waterfront is just way more important than trying to prevent more car traffic and building another freeway, or in this case, a tunnel. So McGinn is the only one of the eight candidates who is opposed to the downtown tunnel. And, that alone would recommend him. The problem with that is that he is also very much, otherwise in favor of the pro-developer agenda and, all the tax credits to developers and whatnot that have already led to Seattle massively overshooting in just, the last 4 years of the Nichols administration. The 20-year, goals for, Seattle's portion of the King County Growth Management Act goals for the number of the amount of development that needs to take residential development that needs to take place in Seattle and the densification of the urban village projects. So McGinn is very similar in that respect. He's also chosen in his campaign to do a bit of demagoguery around issues like the Seattle public schools, which the mayor and the city council really don't have a whole lot to do with. But McGinn is claiming that the city really ought to take over the school district, Well, that's a fairly extreme solution that has generally been a dismal failure everywhere that it's been tried, for the simple reason that people who run the city, A, already have enough to do without worrying about the school district, and B, really don't know squat about how to run a school district. So that's a problem. He's also been very bad on a lot of transportation issues. And the word from folks in the environmental and neighborhood movements is that McGinn can also be very arrogant, which is, again, gets back to the question of Greg Nickels' style. And if McGinn has some of the same problems as Nickels in that respect, he's also a problematic choice. That leaves Joe Malahan, who is something of a mystery guy. He is a, I believe it was T-Mobile. He's a business executive who's been doing a fairly broad ideological, getting broad ideological support. He got a co-endorsement from the Seattle Times, which tends to be fairly conservative. He's got a quote in his mailer from Peter Steinbrück, who is obviously fairly progressive, and everybody in between. And he's basically been running on a less ideological, I'm going to improve city services, etc. kind of platform, and saying a number of the right things on social services. He does have a social service background in addition to his private sector background. And so in the best of or the least worst of a very weak field, we're going to go at least provisionally in the primary with Joe Malahan, not so much as as an endorsement of Malahan per se, but as a desire to get somebody other than Jan Drago in the final with Greg Nickels to make sure that we have actually something of a choice, because none of the other candidates seem to have enough that's sufficiently different from Greg Nickels to warrant wanting to have them in the final round against him. But actually, I'd be happy with McGinn also, as long as it weren't Jan Drago.
All right.
So hopefully all that made sense. That was a long way of saying a very weak endorsement for Joe Malahan.
Okay, that takes us then to City Council.
Yeah, City Council has several races, and most of them are pretty quick. Position number 4, it's a very clear choice between the two candidates most likely to make the final. Those are Sally Bagshaw, who is saying a lot of the right social justice kind of thing, but also getting a lot of her money from downtown and corporate interests, and David Bloom, who is a longtime social justice advocate, probably the best progressive to have a clear shot at winning a council seat, this being an open seat, since Nick Licata first ran for office 12 years ago. So David Bloom in a very strong endorsement for position number 4. And then Licata himself is running for re-election in position number 6. And he's got a couple of fairly well-funded challengers this time. He won't coast to re-election quite as easily as he has the past couple times that he's run for re-election. But he has done an outstanding job, I think, on City Council. Very much deserves re-election. So Nick Licata in position number 6, and then position number 8 is also a little bit of a muddle, because there are a number of people running who are kind of good but not really good. To run through them very quickly, well, we have a couple of people who are sort of offspring of the local dynastic powers that be. Jordan Royer, who's the son of former Mayor Charlie Royer, and Westy Williams, who's the son of former city council powerhouse Jeanette Williams. We've also got Bobby Forsh, who's a Seattle Department of Transportation planner and small business advocate, who's got some good things going for him. Robert Rosenkranz, a repeat candidate, who's also a fairly good liberal from the sort of traditional Democratic Party circles, and then Maple Leaf activist David Miller, who made his name saving a stand of neighborhood trees over the last couple of years in Maple Leaf, which, you know, doesn't sound necessarily like a recommendation for city council, but he's been very good, not just on environmental issues, but on a lot of different issues around social justice and the city budget. And so we're going with David Miller in position number 8, and then also Licata in 6, and David Bloom in position number 4.
So is that a strong endorsement for David Miller in position?
It's a fairly strong endorsement, yes. Although there are other candidates in that race who would be acceptable as well, but Miller, we think, is the best of the bunch.
All right. Seattle School District.
A couple of races in Seattle School District out of the five, and these also are fairly easy endorsements to make. Mary Bass running for re-election in District Number 5. She is the sole remaining Reform candidate from the several who were elected a few years ago. She's been a very strong neighborhood advocate for her constituency in Central Seattle. She's also been a very strong advocate for non-white positions in a district now that is a majority non-white student base, and has been a critic of the whole school closure plan. Has been a very good counterweight to the sort of downtown good old boy, good old gal interests that are now dominant in the Seattle school district. So Mary Bass in District Number 5. And then in District Number 7, this is an open seat, and we're going with longtime school activist and district critic Charlie Mass. He's pledging to, quote, hold the superintendent and staff accountable, which is something of an ethic that is much more desperately needed in the school district, where staff tend to lead the school board around by the nose a lot of the time, and a lot of the policies that you see and the contempt for the public that results is a direct consequence of that. So Charlie Mass in District Number 7, and Charlie Mass in District Number 7, and Mary Bass in District Number 5.
Very good.
They rhyme. It's an easy way to remember it.
Okay. And then finally, the bag fee is up for votes.
Yeah, there's only one ballot measure on the August ballot, and that's thanks to the American Chemistry Council and their millions of dollars per voter. We are passing judgment on the Seattle bag fee, which is the 20-cent per bag tax that's being levied on plastic and paper bags for people who don't use their own recyclable bags. This actually is a very sensible environmental measure. It's the sort of thing people don't think about much, because we don't think about garbage much and where all the stuff that we use goes. But there's something like 360 million of these disposable bags, many of which are the petroleum-based plastic bags that hog landfills, kill marine life, and so forth. 360 million of them in the city of Seattle alone being used every year, even though, you know, 30, 40 years ago, these bags didn't exist. So they're trying to do something to clean up that massive resource waste, and the bag fee is a result. Now, in a number of other cities, including Edmonds, oddly enough, but also large cities like San Francisco and Washington, these bags have been banned outright. And the American Chemistry Council didn't throw nearly the fit that it's throwing here in Seattle, where they don't want to see the precedent, because their livelihood depends on manufacturing more and more of these plastic bags. It has nothing to do with being motivated by the common good or concern for the poor, beleaguered, big box stores that use these bags and so forth. As we discussed many times in this show, this is a very sensible environmental measure. But on top of that, just because this is the initiative process and, you know, sort of checkbook democracy at its very worst, we really don't want to be rewarding the American Chemistry Council by repealing the bag fee as a favor to them, just because they were able to buy their way onto the local Seattle ballot. So in this case, because it's a referendum on a measure that's already been approved by the city council and signed by the mayor, an approved vote retains the bag fee, rejected repeals it. So we're very strongly recommending an approved vote on the Seattle bag fee.
All right. That wraps it up for the
That wraps it up. And once again, all of those recommendations are on the article on our August endorsements. That is the lead article in the current issue of Eat the State. It's out on places where you find free publications as we speak, or you can find it on the web at www.eatthestate.org.
All right. Well, that leaves us about 5 minutes left to try and pound through a few more items, starting with local and update on Nicholsville.
Yeah, we haven't had a chance to talk about Nicholsville for the last few weeks. They moved again a number of days ago. They were forced to move to Terminal 107 at the Port of Seattle. This, I believe, was their seventh quote-unquote permanent move since they started also down in the wilds of West Seattle about a little over a year ago. And the Port of Seattle now is also threatening to evict them, even though it's public land. So they had a rough time, of course, this past week with the brutal heat. Just like when it gets very cold, it's not a good time at all to be homeless. So be thinking of them, and also contact the port and let them know that you do not want to see Nicholsville moved yet again. And then we also had another item on the home was this Tent City 3, where a student group has been attempting to bring Tent City 3 to the University of Washington campus. And we had Mark Emmert, the president of UW, denying that request and refusing to allow the homeless to use any of the campus land for Tent City 3, even though that once again is public land.
All right, and then let's jump to international and start with Afghanistan.
Yeah, 40 U.S. troops dying in Afghanistan in the month of July, by far the heaviest one-month toll. So that war is heating up, even though the quote spring offensive by the Taliban has now melted into summer. We're seeing the results of President Obama's newfound emphasis on Afghanistan, where we're getting more fatalities in Afghanistan, even as Iraq is still not particularly secure, and even though people are still dying there. We had 29 people dying from a series of bombings in Baghdad yesterday. We had a rather notorious memo coming out this week from the senior advisor in Iraq, Captain Colonel Timothy Harris, saying that, quote, the U.S. should declare victory and go home by August 2010. That's 15 months ahead of the schedule, because according to recent least, Iraqi forces that have been trained by the U.S. aren't going to get any better than they are right now, so the U.S. should just flee Iraq. But, you know, after 8 years, you have to raise the question, which was again raised during the counterspin in the program previous to this one, what are we doing in Afghanistan, and why is the central government that we're supporting there so weak, so corrupt, and so hostile to the needs of women, and Afghanistan has become a failed narco state, and now we're seeing more and more troops dying there as well.
All right, and Iran.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about this more in future weeks, but the resistance in Iran continues, even though it hasn't been part of the headlines so much since the election in June and the protests that immediately followed. This week marked the 40-day cycle of mourning for the original martyrs from the protests in June, and so there are other major protests there again this week, and then we're also starting to see fissions within the conservatives who are running Iran. Ahmadinejad sacking four ministers this week, suggesting a further split. He's sworn in on Monday for his second term after that fraudulent election, and so expect to see more protests in the coming week.
All right, and climate change?
A new study reported in The Guardian this week showing the world is going to heat up significantly faster than expected over the next 5 years. Once again, the news on climate change from the scientific front, the phrase worse than we thought it was going to be or worse than expected seems to appear in every one of these stories. That dynamic is said to be a combination of global warming and then over the next few years, El Nino and solar activity cycling back to their peaks as well. So if you thought it was going to be hot, if you thought it was hot this week, it's going to continue to be like that every now and then for the next several years.
All right, and then very briefly from the I Can't Believe It department, the funding for the F-22 is shut down.
Yeah, it was shut down by the House in this case, even though the Senate had approved it with crossover votes from both Murray and Cantwell. Thank you, senators from the aircraft industry. The F-22 being a program that Obama has threatened to veto. The Pentagon says it doesn't want it. It's huge pork barrel military spending. The House finally shut it down. However, they still included in their military bill a number of things that the military has said they didn't want. $485 million to keep along a presidential helicopter program that Obama has said he didn't want, yada, yada, yada. So there's still an awful lot of waste in military spending.
And just to clarify, the F-22, none of it is built here in Washington State, so they weren't really defending jobs here in the states. As
no, they were just defending the dynamic of anything that flies must be good because it flies, and we wouldn't want anybody to get the wrong idea.
All right. And events.
Yeah, one major one coming up this weekend. We heard 7:30 hour events next weekend commemorating the anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The actual anniversary of Hiroshima is August 6th, which is this coming Thursday, and so there will be the annual lantern floating at Green Lake, our Hiroshima to Hope. The program will start at 6:30 at Green Lake at the boathouse there, and then the lantern floating will happen right around sunset at 9:30. And for anybody who's never been there, it really is a beautiful, touching ceremony, and you should go check it out. It's quite the spectacle.
All right. Talking with Jav Parrish, co-editor at Eat This State. And where do people find Eat This State?
Eat This State comes out every couple weeks, although we're skipping a week for this summer recess. So our next issue will be August 20th. But the current one, as we mentioned, does have all the primary endorsements in it. So check it out. That's our favorite or our most popular feature when we do that a couple times every year. So it's where you find free publications at bookstores and cafes, King County Library System, etc. Or you can find us on the web at www.eatthestate.org. And if you have questions, comments, tips, complaints about who we did or didn't endorse, you can address them all to our email at editorial@eatthestate.org.